there are a lot of voices in society that you could listen to. In fact, the passage that was read this morning, Proverbs chapter 1 and verses 20 through 22, it describes one of those voices as the voice of wisdom calling out at the head of the street. Well, we know it's not literally there, but it is there. It is, we know there is a voice that God has for us to listen to, and it is the voice of wisdom who calls out to us to hear it, to listen to it, to heed its voice. From all the voices that we can hear, we construct presuppositions that give meaning to our lives. That's what those voices are. It can be a little voice inside your head. It can be the voice of a teacher. It can be the voice of God, the voice of wisdom calling out in the street. Can you hear that voice over all the other voices? That's what we want today to think about, listening to the voice of wisdom as it calls out to us. We have a story in front of us today, the story of the rich fool. This particular story illustrates wisdom on a very particular issue, and that is the issue of possessions, wealth, and a life of true riches. Which voice are you going to listen to? Let's take a look at the story and see how Jesus displays this wisdom for us to consider. We begin in this particular story with something very interesting, and that is a family dispute. That's what raises the issue that Jesus discusses here, a family dispute. You ever had any of those? This is a family dispute about an inheritance. And what we have here in the beginning of this, as Jesus, as we read about the story, we have one voice, the world, telling us and saying one thing. Can you envision the anger and family discord behind the man's request? By the way, you know, have the courts finally decided on the singer Prince's money yet? I don't believe he had a will, did he? It's a big dispute. Everybody wants it. Everybody thinks they deserve to have his money. And it's very interesting here because there's one voice that says, we need to dispute about this because I want to have this money. What does Jesus do here? He does a very interesting thing. He refuses to be an arbiter in the case of this particular family dispute. He probably could be. He has the wisdom to know who has the right to the money or not. But he refuses to get involved in this. And you see, he refuses to get involved because there's a deeper issue here. And this little family dispute is kind of a microcosm of what often happens on a much bigger societal scale. It happens in families. It happens in society as a whole. Whose money is it? Shouldn't I get some of that money? Doesn't that money belong to me? Jesus doesn't care who's right or wrong here in this family. The man may have a legitimate right to the money he's saying is, I want you to, you know, arbitrate this dispute for me. There is a school of thought in society overall that says, I have a right to what others have produced. Maybe this man felt, I have a right to what my father or whoever it was passed on the money. I have a right to that because I'm part of the family too. He could have been right. But we justify it by saying the government should take from them and give it to me. I have a right to what others have. Be very careful of any scheme, whether it's called an equitable distribution of goods, a share the wealth scheme, or some other fine-sounding name. You still have a system built on what I think Jesus warns about here, and that is covetousness. It is sneaky and very subtle form of me justifying myself of having something of what is somebody else's. The root motivation is probably not justice. Maybe even this family dispute, he thought the root motivation was justice. Maybe it was covetousness. Be very careful of covetousness in your own heart. Jesus, in fact, tells us that. He says, beware, does he not? Be on your guard against all covetousness. He doesn't judge the legitimacy of the man's dispute, whether the man is entitled to the estate. Covetousness was serious enough to list in the Ten Commandments. It's number 10. Don't covet your neighbor's goods, your neighbor's wife, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. You see, that's an internal thing, isn't it? It's a thing that it's a desire that kind of grows up within us. It's an impulse that says, I really want that. I don't know if you've ever had the experience or not, but we've often, more often than not, we bought used cars. And several years ago, when we had a van, we bought a used van. It was pretty good. I mean, it was a really nice van, had a lot of the new features in it, but it was several years old. And every time I'd see one of the newer ones, I'd go, gee, wouldn't it be nice to have one of those? It's got features that I don't have. And I just bought the van. You know, I'm sitting there thinking, wow, wouldn't it be nice to have this feature and that feature and this other feature? Well, the van I had was fine, you know, but you kind of just see the newer things that you want more and more. In Mark chapter 7 and verse 22, Jesus lists covetousness among the many things in the human heart that cause us to be defiled, that cause us to sin. And he lists it along with what I consider covetousness's cousins, jealousy and envy. Here's how the dictionary defines them. Envy, the painful or resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another, joined with the desire to possess the same advantage or possession. Did you catch that? A painful or resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another. More often than not, it's probably a resentful awareness of something enjoyed by another. Jealousy, hostility toward a rival or one perceived to have that advantage. Covetousness, an inordinate desire for wealth, illegitimate desire for wealth, especially that which belongs to another. And you know what? This particular feeling, this particular impulse, it's not proprietary to any one economic status. Rich and poor alike are prone to covetousness. It crosses the boundary lines of all races, all nationalities, all economic levels. Everybody is prone to being covetousness. If you have a lot, you probably want more. If you don't have any, you tend to want what somebody else has. Beware of covetousness of all. Beware of all covetousness. Can you hear Jesus' warning here? I mean, are you really listening to it? And, you know, are you allowing that to be the voice that you hearken to, as opposed to the voice of saying, we want more. We want more. We want even more. Jesus does something beyond giving us a warning here. He gives us a new definition of the good life. The world says having a lot of possessions is the good life. And obviously the rich have it best. The good life is in the abundance of possessions. Maybe even having the very best foods to eat, having the best place to live, maybe even owning your own island. That's the life. That's the good life. You get to be your own boss. You get to have freedom from everybody else. And that's really what we're all striving to get. And the one who dies with the most possessions, well, that's the one that wins, I suppose. And we're bombarded with those messages, aren't we? We are bombarded with the messages urging us to acquire the biggest, the best, and the latest. It's like me with my van. You know, you got a good van. Well, gee, there's still something better. Just because people are beautiful, famous, and wealthy doesn't mean they have the good life. But that's the message we're told. And we're bombarded with it in commercials, in the kind of shows that we watch. You know, all of those things kind of incorporate this voice of telling us we got to have all these great, bigger, better, latest things. And Jesus says, just throw that out. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. That's the voice of Jesus. That's the voice of wisdom. I think Jesus is addressing here what I'd like to call the American dream run amok. You know, people want to come to this country because of the opportunities they have. To make a better life for their families, that's a good thing. To be able to supply themselves and their families with what they need, nothing wrong with that. But it's the American dream run amok when possessions possess you. When the possessions that you have are never enough, and you want to amass more and more and more, and maybe you begin to want what somebody else has. You know, it's, you know, keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing. Or maybe it's wanting what the Joneses have, not just trying to keep up with them. We are very fortunate, are we not, to live in a land of abundance of things, an abundance of food, and an abundance of opportunity. I believe those things are blessings from God. People want to come here for that. But you need to remember, we need to remember, what Moses warned about Israel. In the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6 and verses 10 through 12, Moses is giving his people a final address. They are about ready to go into the land that God promised to give them. This is an inheritance that God said, you can have this. This is not something they desired because it was a sort of the wealth of possessions that we get more and more and more. We want more. God said, I want to give this to you. Listen to Moses' warning. Deuteronomy 6, 10 through 12. And when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give you with great and good cities that you did not build, and houses full of all good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant. And when you eat and are full, then take care, lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. There was an inherent danger they were just about ready to face that came along with the inherent blessing. That inherent danger was to look at all the things God was giving them and say, this is the good life. I don't need God anymore. And that is exactly what we see happening over and over and over again among the people of Israel as they entered the land. It wasn't very long until after Joshua was gone, they began to chase after other gods, and they began perhaps to think about all these things they had and didn't need God anymore. Remember that warning. The rich don't just have it best. Those riches that you have, they have come from God. And you need not to forget that he's the one who gave them to you. And you need to remember that those possessions are not the things that need to possess you. They're good things. Use them wisely. In fact, you know, Jesus actually kind of tells this story about the rich fool here. And I think that's kind of the conclusion to this wisdom that Jesus is offering us. A tragic end to basically a foolish life. The foolish man says to himself, I got lots of stuff. In fact, you know what I'll do? I think I'll spend the rest of my life enjoying my stuff. I'm going to eat, I'm going to drink, I'm going to be merry, and, you know, I'll worry about dying later on, I guess. He probably doesn't even think about it. He just sees all his stuff as somehow giving him a sense of joy and completeness that he doesn't have to work anymore. I don't know, is this early retirement? I don't know, maybe it is. This is, after all, the good life, he thinks. Having the best, eating the best, wearing the best, and enjoying merriment. This is not a stupid man. This is a foolish man. People like this, we think of them as just being not very smart. They're not unsmart. They're not unintelligent. Some of them have very high IQs, I'm sure. But there's a wisdom that they're listening to that is not the wisdom of God. They're not listening to the voice calling out at the head of the street. As the Proverbs tells us, wisdom is calling to us. And they're placing everything they have into this idea that as long as I have lots of stuff, my life can be joyful. Well, what does God say? He calls them a fool. This night, your soul is required of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays treasure up for himself and is not rich toward God. Jesus essentially redefines the good life. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Life consists in how rich we are toward God. And there's just some very interesting things, that some very interesting perspectives that the wisdom that God gives here is giving us, is telling us. Not the least of which is Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 20, where he tells us to store up treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust can destroy. Well, that's kind of an interesting one to me, because maybe some of you are investors. And by the way, if you have any kind of retirement plan, you're an investor. Okay, if you put your money in something that your company gives you, or if you put it in an IRA, you're an investor. You're investing money because you hope that later on, number one, you're going to have this money maybe with a little interest. Okay, so if you have anything like that, you are an investor. Think about the investment here. Where would you put your money if you had a choice between put it in a place where it could get stolen, put it under your mattress? You know, people used to stuff it in their mattress. I remember my dad telling me one time when he had to go, and when he was a salesman, he had to go and collect money for something he had sold to this person. The guy goes and gets one of the old lard cans. Some of us are old enough to remember those cans that you bought. It was stuffed with money. He pulled it out. My dad said he picked up a bunch of bills on top of it. He said it didn't even make a dent in the money that was in there. And he says, he pays my dad in cash. And my dad says, why don't you put it in the bank? Well, you know, I just don't trust him. Well, there are all kinds of ways you can lose your money, right? I mean, you could, a house fire could burn that lard can to pieces. A bank can get robbed. If you had a chance to put your money in something where it could never lose interest, would you do it? Now, I know, don't go listening to anybody that comes, you know, you'll never lose your money in my investment. Don't ever, you know, that's too good to be true. Except when Jesus says it. Put your money where neither moth nor rust can destroy. Think about it. When you get to the end of the next life, you can go to God's bank account. And if you've put money into that bank account, you got a lot to draw on. So think about it as an investment. But it's an investment in the next life, and it takes faith, and it takes hearing the voice of wisdom to do it. There's no question about that. But you have the opportunity to make an investment in something you will always gain interest on. I mean, if nothing else, all of it's going to be there for you. Not going to die. I mean, it's not going to kind of fritter away because you've spent it. And God's not going to take it and spend it on himself. He doesn't need your money. What he does is give us an opportunity to build something for the next life. And it is interesting, when the Apostle Paul is about ready to depart and not be doing his work anymore, he goes in Acts chapter 20 and he talks to the Ephesian elders. You know, the same elders who were the elders in the church in the book of Ephesus, or in the book of Ephesians. He talks to them. And he explains a whole bunch of things to them about how he worked hard and, you know, he didn't take anybody else's money. But he ends the whole exhortation about them being faithful with this exhortation with Jesus' words that says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. So he ends that whole exhortation with this whole idea of what's the really wise life? What is the good life? The good life is giving more than receiving. And just in case that's not enough, I want you to hear the words of what he says to, excuse me, to Timothy in the book of 1 Timothy. Probably Timothy is even working in Ephesus at this point, so it kind of has an interesting connection. But in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19, listen to Paul's counsel to those who have money. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. Think the rich fool. The uncertainty of riches, the uncertainty of his own life. But on God, who richly provides us everything to enjoy. Think having the good things that most of you probably have, at least to some degree or another. God gives you those things. You can enjoy them. They are, however, verse 18, to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so they may take hold of that which is truly life. See, Paul incorporates, I think, everything Jesus is trying to tell us. Beware of covetousness. I know he doesn't actually say that there, but you know, beware of putting your trust in riches. And do that which really builds up for the good life. Storing up things for yourselves in heaven where you can get them when you get there. That's the good life.
Amen.
That will not only be the good life, that is the best life that you will ever have and can ever imagine. That's the good life. Paul is telling us, I think, the same thing that Jesus is telling about the rich fool. Beware of covetousness and change the way you look at life. The wisdom that comes from God is a good life, is a life that is rich toward him. I would conclude with several things. Number one, don't be ashamed or afraid to have enough to provide for your family, but beware of wanting more and more and more and more. Live simply. Think about what you really need. Get rid of that which you really don't. Give it away. Give some to others. Be generous. Paul says to the rich, you know, be generous and be full of good works. Do that so you might store up treasures in heaven. Think about how you use your possessions. Whatever you have. Some of you have more than others have. That's okay. But we have to live a life of good deeds. We have to look at what we have. What's the term we use? We're stewards of what God has given us. And as stewards, we are bound to give back to God what he's given to us, do we not? Live a life of good deeds. All of this looks toward the life after this one. Anything that prepares you for the next life, I think we can legitimately say, that's the good life. Begin preparation for that good life by seeing your possessions properly, but also by obeying the gospel. As Floyd said in his prayer, there may be some whom we know, maybe here, who have never really obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, and that really, that's the beginning of the good life, because that's the beginning of knowing you got a life after this one. All this stuff about being aware of covetousness, that comes with living the life. But just in case any of you have not thought about that and maybe you need to think about beginning your new life, it's a matter of simply having faith, being baptized for the remission of sins, making a confession of your faith, and living that life with us to be a Christian until the next life comes. Won't you think about that while together we stand and sing a song of encouragement.